On the pristine beaches of Belize in late 2019, I shared wine with legendary filmmaker Francis Ford Coppola as we discussed curious reports of a mysterious illness emerging from Wuhan, China. The conversation seemed almost surreal. 27 people ill, 7 in serious condition, and Chinese authorities being characteristically vague. Neither of us could have imagined how dramatically our world would transform in the coming months. This casual beachside chat would soon feel like the last moment of blissful ignorance before a global catastrophe. Within months, the novel coronavirus would infect millions, overwhelm healthcare systems worldwide, and force society into unprecedented isolation. The book World War C by neurosurgeon and CNN medical correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta would later become a number one New York Times bestseller, praised by Bill Gates as a great guide to understanding how to stay safe during this pandemic and the next one. Drawing on Gupta's unique position at the intersection of medicine, media, and public health policy, the book offers both a post-mortem of our pandemic response and a blueprint for future resilience. As COVID-19 claimed hundreds of thousands of American lives, the tragedy unfolded largely behind closed doors. Unlike disasters with visible centers of grief, this pandemic isolated its victims, leading to what psychologists call compassion fade, as the numbers grew too large to comprehend. The virus proved maddeningly unpredictable, killing some quickly while leaving others with persistent symptoms that might never resolve. Nearly one-third of COVID patients became long haulers, with a significant portion developing from initially asymptomatic infections. The pandemic brutally exposed America's stark racial and economic divides. By mid-February 2021, COVID had killed black residents in Los Angeles at nearly twice the rate and Latinx residents at nearly 3 times the rate of white Angelenos. Meanwhile, initially lower death rates in places like Mumbai's Dharavi slum presented puzzling contrasts to America's experience. Data from Johns Hopkins University revealed wildly unpredictable trajectories across different nations despite varying mitigation strategies. South Korea and the United Kingdom provide a striking example. In early March 2020, South Korea averaged 550 new daily cases compared to just 33 in the UK. By month's end, South Korea had dropped to 125 while the UK soared to 4,500. The difference? South Korea rapidly implemented a test, trace, isolate, and treat strategy, leveraging mobile technology and applying lessons from previous SARS and MERS outbreaks. Former CDC Director Bob Redfield attributes America's high death count partly to the population's poor baseline health, obesity, diabetes, and cardiovascular disorders, diseases of privilege common in wealthy nations. Poorer countries may have had another advantage, pre-existing immunity. East Asian, Southeast Asian, and North Asian countries experienced lower rates of disease and death despite varying healthcare systems, suggesting possible cross-immunity in regions near the pandemic's origin. The concept of novelty proved profoundly challenging during the pandemic. As adults, we rarely encounter truly unfamiliar situations, and when confronted with something unprecedented, our minds instinctively categorize it within familiar frameworks. When COVID emerged, scientists reflexively compared it to previous coronaviruses like SARS and MERS. This mental shortcut became an obstacle. Existing knowledge hindered rather than helped understanding. We initially believed human-to-human transmission was unlikely, masks weren't helpful, and asymptomatic spread impossible. We were wrong on all counts. This failure of imagination paralleled the 9/11 Commission's findings. We suffered from failures in policy, capabilities, management, and most critically, imagination. Just as we couldn't envision weaponized airplanes before 9/11, we couldn't imagine an invisible virus overwhelming our advanced healthcare system. February 2020 became the lost month, a crucial period when America remained out of step with emerging science. On March 9, 2020, Gupta publicly declared the crisis a pandemic on CNN before the WHO's official designation. The backlash was immediate, accusations of fear-mongering and even threats requiring security intervention. This wasn't a decision made lightly. With over 100,000 cases and 3,000 deaths globally, and the virus present on every continent except Antarctica, the situation met the general pandemic criteria: a virus causing illness or death, sustained person-to-person transmission, and evidence of worldwide spread. Meanwhile, the CDC's Dr. Nancy Messonnier had already used the term pandemic in late February, recognizing the gravity of the situation before many were willing to acknowledge it. Her February 25th warning that significant disruption to everyday life was coming drew the Trump administration's ire, as they maintained the virus was contained and very well under control. After her statements, she was sidelined from White House task force briefings. A month before February's crucial tabletop exercise, Dr. Carter Metcher warned an elite group of public health experts nicknamed Red Dawn that the WHO and CDC were behind the curve in responding to the novel coronavirus. His January 28 email was blunt: "Any way you cut it, this is going to be bad." That same day, National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien warned President Trump this would be the roughest thing he'd face. CDC Director Bob Redfield's repeated requests to send investigators to China were denied, even when President Trump appealed directly to President Xi. In private conversations with his Chinese counterpart, Dr. George Gao, Redfield recognized clear evidence of human-to-human transmission when examining the first 27 COVID cases, which formed three distinct clusters. Yet Gao initially insisted there was no evidence of human-to-human transmission, apparently unaware that the Chinese military had taken control of the outbreak response. The Crimson Contagion exercise had modeled a pandemic response based on influenza, not accounting for COVID's unique characteristics, particularly its long incubation period during which asymptomatic carriers could spread the virus. This fundamental difference partly explains America's chaotic response. As Redfield explained, early on the focus was symptomatic cases, case identification, isolation, and contact tracing. But it became very clear to us in late February that, unfortunately, the major mode of transmission of this virus was not symptomatic transmission, and that changed the whole ballgame. Testing too little, too late became our original sin in the COVID response. While flu is typically treated based on symptoms without testing, COVID required extensive testing due to asymptomatic spread. The CDC developed test kits within days of sequencing the virus, but they failed in most labs. Rather than using the WHO's working test, America waited for its own system that never adequately materialized. Redfield revealed his most disturbing White House conflict involved pressure to tamper with the CDC's MMWR reports. When pushed to contradict scientific findings, he refused, declaring the reports sacrosanct. Meanwhile, Dr. Birx found herself among people who did not take the pandemic seriously at the White House. By mid-May, the administration attempted to artificially reduce death counts, and Scott Atlas's promotion of letting the virus rip through younger people created further chaos. Rather than uniting against a common viral enemy, Americans fought each other along political lines. Despite COVID-19's devastation, viruses are actually necessary for life on Earth. They thrive everywhere. Thousands enter our bodies daily, and oceans contain nearly 200,000 viral populations. Many viruses benefit humans, including bacteriophages that destroy harmful bacteria on our mucosal surfaces. Our virome, our personal viral library, is a lifelong companion working alongside bacteria and fungi in our microbiome. Virus hunter Dr. Nathan Wolf notes that up to half the genetic material in our guts remains unidentified life, and humans have four times more viral genetic material in our genome than our own genes. Throughout evolution, viruses have shaped human DNA, contributing to cognitive abilities and immune function. Ancient viruses have even given us the ability to have children through the syncytion 1 gene essential for placenta formation. Viruses evolve at lightning speed compared to humans, While it took human genomes 8 million years to evolve by 1%, coronaviruses can change that much in mere days. As single-stranded RNA molecules, they accumulate mutations a million times faster than human DNA. This helps explain why RNA viruses mutate so rapidly, allowing them to quickly adapt to our immune defenses by altering their spike proteins. Today, 3/4 of new infectious diseases affecting humans come from animals, with approximately one new disease emerging every 4 months. Modern pandemics increasingly originate from wildlife rather than domesticated animals. China remains a hotspot for emerging diseases due to its population density, agricultural practices, and proximity between humans and animals. Bats serve as prime reservoirs for new viruses. They comprise 1/4 of all mammals on Earth and carry over 60 viruses that can infect humans. Their social nature, large colonies, ability to fly, and unique physiology, including fever-like body temperatures, make them perfect hosts that can harbor viruses without suffering ill effects themselves. Jamie Metzl, a geopolitical expert with impressive credentials, including service at the National Security Council and WHO, believes there's an 85% chance the pandemic started with an accidental leak from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. He doesn't suggest deliberate engineering for bioweapons, but rather that the virus was possibly educated in lab conditions to better infect humans. Several suspicious circumstances exist. Wuhan houses China's first BSL-4 lab known for bat coronavirus research. Coronavirus work was sometimes conducted in less secure settings. Chinese scientists themselves initially questioned how a bat virus reached Wuhan in winter when bats were hibernating. And the WHO investigation was heavily controlled by Chinese authorities. 3 hours after the COVID-19 virus's genetic code was published in January 2020, scientists worldwide began developing diagnostic tests and vaccines. Dr. Fauci made what he considers perhaps his best intervention decision, directing his team to immediately pursue vaccine development despite no confirmed U.S. cases yet. By March, they had entered Phase 1 trials, coinciding with New York's COVID explosion. In November 2020, Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla called Fauci with extraordinary news. Their vaccine showed over 90% effectiveness at preventing severe COVID-19, far exceeding the FDA's 50% threshold and typical flu vaccine efficacy of 40 to 60%. Moderna soon reported similar results. Both vaccines utilized revolutionary mRNA technology, effectively turning the human body into an internal vaccine factory and providing cellular-level protection across all age groups. Vaccines may have done more good for humanity than any other medical advance in history. Dr. Bob Redfield calls vaccination the most powerful gift of science from modern medicine, while Dr. Paul Offit notes we've largely eliminated the memory of many diseases, which ironically contributes to anti-vaccination sentiment as people forget the horrors of polio, whooping cough, and measles. Smallpox, among history's most fearsome diseases, dates back tens of thousands of years, killing more Europeans than the Black Plague. Dr. Larry Brilliant, who witnessed the last case of smallpox transmission in the world, describes the disease as having killed billions throughout history. At its peak in Europe, smallpox killed 400,000 people annually with a 30% mortality rate and leaving a third of survivors blind. The last case in an unbroken chain of transmission stretching back 10,000 years was 2-year-old Rahima Banu in India in 1975. Despite the overwhelming evidence supporting vaccination, anti-vaccine movements have persisted since the 19th century when tens of thousands protested compulsory smallpox vaccination. Today's anti-vaccine rhetoric echoes these historical arguments, but spreads more effectively through the internet and social media. Dr. Peter Hotez notes the movement gained mainstream traction around 2015, fueled by targeted messaging, organization, and financial interests in alternative products. The mRNA COVID vaccines represent breakthrough technology built on 30 years of research. Unlike traditional vaccines, they contain only instructions for making the virus's spike protein, never entering cell nuclei or affecting DNA. These vaccines deliver a double benefit by stimulating both antibody production and killer immune cells, making them particularly effective against the virus. As Lewis Thomas noted, Earth's membrane is tough, while humans remain vulnerable. Despite scientists' accurate predictions, the COVID pandemic caught many unprepared. The confluence of climate change, deforestation, habitat loss, human migration, and development creates ideal conditions for more frequent disease outbreaks. Drawing from hundreds of conversations with global experts, Gupta designed the pandemic-proof plan using the PROF acronym: plan ahead, rethink and rewire risk in your brain, optimize health, organize family, and fight for the future of us. Plan ahead. Dr. Bonnie Henry, British Columbia's provincial health officer, wasn't caught off guard by COVID-19. With experience from SARS and Ebola outbreaks, she took decisive action in January 2020, effectively communicating what people needed to do, why they needed to do it, and how her team would help them accomplish it. Her compassionate approach, "Be kind, be calm, be safe," earned her recognition as one of the most effective public health figures in the world. In retrospect, it's surprising how quickly the world changed during the pandemic, from people staying home to cleaner air, schools going online, and businesses closing. Telehealth visits at Gupta's hospital skyrocketed to 80,000 monthly. By 2021, pandemic burnout had set in despite our slowed lives, with rising depression, anxiety, and stress. We experienced various losses, from lives to jobs, milestones, and our sense of security. The persistent uncertainty proved especially toxic mentally. According to Nicholas Christakis, we should view COVID's impact in three phases: the immediate period, masks, distancing; the intermediate period, reaching community immunity by 2022; and the post-pandemic period, beginning around 2024. History suggests we'll eventually see a roaring 20s effect, with increased socializing, spending, and risk-taking once the pandemic truly ends. Virus hunter Nathan Wolf believes that while pandemic threats will continue, our perception has forever changed, a positive shift that will enable swifter responses when they matter most. Unlike 10 years ago, when he struggled to convince business leaders about epidemic risks, 60% acknowledged the threat, but only 20% had emergency plans, COVID has finally rallied the private sector. Rethink and rewire risk in your brain. The human brain, our most complex organ, constantly assesses risk to keep us safe, using sensory systems as perimeter defenses against threats. But COVID-19 presented the perfect challenge, an invisible, novel threat our brains couldn't detect or recall from memory, leaving us flying blind without guidance. Individual risk tolerance varies dramatically. When told of a 0.1% chance of COVID complications for his asthmatic child, Jake Tapper immediately canceled family travel plans. Similarly, when presented with a 0.5% case fatality rate, one school superintendent was alarmed that 1 in 200 people will die, while another person interpreted it as, "We are 99.5% good." The Moral Machine experiment, which gathered 40 million ethical decisions worldwide about autonomous vehicle crash scenarios, revealed our hierarchical valuing of human life. Babies, children, and pregnant women were most likely to be saved, while the elderly ranked just above cats and criminals in the sacrifice hierarchy. This raises profound questions. Would America's pandemic response have differed if COVID primarily killed young people? When faced with novel threats like COVID-19, our brains struggle to process truly new experiences. Infectious disease doctors initially placed the virus in a SARS box, assuming it would spread only symptomatically and disappear, a terrible mistake. Adult brains reflexively try to fit new experiences into existing frameworks, while children more easily accept novelty. Our brains often default to emotional responses when calculating risk, based on limited or biased information. Common risk assessment traps include optimism bias, it won't happen to me, false sense of control, confusion from mixed messaging, confirmation bias, seeking information that supports what we want to believe, and habituation through exposure therapy. These mental shortcuts explain why people continued risky behaviors during COVID despite rising infection rates. Ahmad Ayad, a 40-year-old fitness enthusiast who ran marathons and managed multiple businesses, became one of the first COVID patients on a ventilator at Johns Hopkins Hospital in March 2020. Despite his exceptional physical condition, the virus devastated him. He lost 60 pounds of muscle during his 25-day medically induced coma. Doctors repeatedly told his parents he wouldn't survive the night, but his father insisted, "My son is a fighter. He's not going to die." His shocking case served as a wake-up call that even the extremely fit weren't immune to COVID's devastating effects. During the pandemic, people responded to stress in various ways, becoming either chunks, gaining weight, monks, finding spirituality, drunks, increasing alcohol consumption, or hunks, getting fitter. While comfort food and alcohol sales soared initially, with 22% drinking more alcohol and 1 in 5 stress eating, about 1/3 of consumers, particularly those under 45, pivoted toward healthier eating habits. The pandemic highlighted America's obesity epidemic, which affects 40% of adults and 20% of children, significantly increasing COVID risks. Obese patients were 74% more likely to need intensive care and 48% more likely to die from the virus. Remaking your metabolism requires rethinking food entirely, not as mere fuel, but as information that communicates with your genes. While supplement sales surged during the pandemic, multivitamin use increased by 28% in the U.S., we lack evidence that specific supplements fortify immunity against COVID. The scientific consensus is that nutrients work best when consumed through food rather than pills, creating an entourage effect where micronutrients work synergistically. The microbiome is the critical biological hinge connecting our environment to our immune system. While we're still in the we-don't-know-yet phase of understanding the ideal microbiome composition, what's clear is that diversity matters most. The more diverse your gut bacteria, the healthier. Probiotics can be consumed through fermented foods like yogurt, kimchi, and kombucha, where lactic acid fermentation allows beneficial bacteria to multiply while creating an acidic environment that kills harmful pathogens. Three fundamental pillars support optimal immunity: movement, quality sleep, and stress management. Just 22 minutes of daily moderate exercise strengthens immune function and reduces COVID severity so significantly that the CDC lists inactivity as a risk factor. Sleep acts as natural medicine, recalibrating our body and refreshing cells down to the molecular level. During sleep, circulating immune cells actually peak, explaining sleep's defensive power. Finally, managing toxic stress is crucial, as unrelenting stress hormones compromise immunity and damage the microbiome by stalling digestion and allowing unfriendly bacteria to flourish. As we learn to live with COVID, which may remain in our environment indefinitely, families must organize themselves differently than before the pandemic. While the world focused on COVID-19, attention shifted away from chronic health issues like heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and dementia. Regular checkups and screenings must resume, along with staying current on COVID booster shots to maintain community immunity. Rather than focusing on learning loss, we should address the thriving gap created by the pandemic in children's education. While disadvantaged students faced greater challenges with remote learning, educators view the pandemic as an interruption rather than permanent regression. The thriving gap includes not just academics, but social and emotional development, especially for teenagers. Psychologist Angela Duckworth emphasizes children's natural resilience and the importance of framing the pandemic as a learning opportunity rather than dwelling on losses. The pandemic devastated many families' emergency savings. Financial experts now recommend prioritizing the rebuilding of emergency funds, ideally accumulating up to a full year's worth of living expenses, even before paying off debt or resuming discretionary spending. This approach provides maximum flexibility to weather another potential pandemic, focusing first on essential bills while directing remaining funds toward emergency savings. The pandemic dramatically increased the rate at which people filled out advance directives, 5 times higher than before, yet fewer than a third of healthy U.S. adults have one. These legal documents specify preferred medical care if you become seriously ill, including end-of-life decisions and designating someone to ensure your healthcare wishes are followed. Without these documents, families face crisis mode decisions about treatments like dialysis, chest compressions, or defibrillation, potentially triggering enormous unexpected medical costs. The pandemic devastated long-term care facilities, with nearly 1 in 12 residents dying of COVID, and closer to 1 in 10 in nursing homes. These deaths constituted over a third of all U.S. COVID fatalities. Factors making these facilities vulnerable include frequent physical contact, staff working across multiple locations, and residents sharing close quarters. Infection control problems predated the pandemic, with 80% of nursing homes cited for deficiencies between 2013 to 2017. When considering facilities, ask about testing protocols, vaccination mandates for staff, outbreak procedures, and safety measures. Fighting for our collective health requires understanding that disease anywhere threatens people everywhere. Drawing on 20 years covering global outbreaks, Gupta shares how pathogens like SARS, 10% fatality rate, H5N1 avian flu, 40+% fatality, H1N1 swine flu, very contagious but 0.02% fatality, and Ebola demonstrate different pandemic threats. The chapter emphasizes that while wealthy nations can better protect their citizens, true safety requires global cooperation and equitable resource distribution. In Guinea, during the 2014 Ebola outbreak, Gupta witnessed firsthand the devastation of a disease with 50 to 90% mortality. Unlike COVID, Ebola only becomes contagious after symptoms appear, requiring direct contact with bodily fluids. Despite being harder to transmit, Ebola kills efficiently by disarming the immune system and causing catastrophic internal and external bleeding. When Ebola reached America, all 11 infected people survived because they received treatment at specialized facilities, highlighting how geography determines survival rates for infectious diseases. In April 2021, while Americans began returning to normal life, India faced a devastating COVID surge that claimed Gupta's uncle. Despite weathering 2020 relatively well, India's health minister had prematurely declared victory in March 2021. By mid-April, India recorded the world's highest single-day case count, 400,000 plus, overwhelming hospitals and crematoriums. This catastrophe stemmed from leadership failures, public fatigue after harsh lockdowns, massive religious gatherings, political rallies, and new variants. Though vaccines remained effective against these variants, only 3% of Indians were fully vaccinated when the surge hit, including Gupta's uncle, who would have been prioritized in America. Pandemics unmask our true humanity, our values, morals, and ethics. Despite hardships, the best of humanity has emerged through rekindled friendships, deeper family connections, and newfound purposes. As an eternal optimist, Gupta believes we'll rise to future challenges, drawing parallels to the 1918 pandemic that killed 200,000 Americans in October alone and continued through 3 waves until summer 1919. The COVID crisis propelled medical advances like mRNA vaccines while stripping life to its essentials. Though the pandemic will leave a painful scar, Gupta believes we'll learn, grow, and develop in ways that strengthen our future resilience.